Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Dan Huddleston's memoir is a story of overcoming, a story of succeeding, a story of achieving the American dream. His life has led him on a journey that is beyond his imagination. He participated in one of the most polarizing events in U.S. history, the Vietnam War. Also a participant in quite possibly the most important event in U.S. labor history, the 1981 Air Traffic Controller Strike. That event led him to an amazing adventure. He lived outside of the United States for 9 years, has been on 6 of the 7 continents, visited more than 90 countries. Along the way, a brilliant and beautiful young woman decided to become his partner and accompany him on that journey. A boy with no confidence grew up to play the ultimate confidence game, Chicago Air Traffic Control. The extraordinary life of an ordinary man is the story of that adventure, and author Dan Huddleston is our guest on This Week in America. Dan, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here.
What a remarkable story. I can't wait to get into this. The book available, of course, Amazon, wherever books are sold. We'll give that information as we go through the conversation. What made you start writing this book, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man? At what point did you say, you know, I've got a story to tell. I want to share it with others?
Well, Rick, in July of 2018, I lost my lovely lady to cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
In January of 2019, I was wandering around at loose ends, trying to figure out what to do with myself. And I can't even tell you why, but I just suddenly started jotting down memories. And I put some of those out on Facebook, and friends and family members who read them encouraged me to turn it into a book. So I spent the next 15 months compiling all of these memories and turning them into something that felt like it was readable. Then I found a publisher, the publisher I chose is Austin Macaulay out of London, and I went with them because a great deal of the story occurs out of the United States, I just had a feeling that they might be able to deal with that better than a U.S. publisher.
They were really able to capture that. It's a story, it's raw, it's honest, it's funny, it's a love story as well. So sorry to hear about the passing of your wife, a very important part of this incredible journey that you were on. How long did it, you mentioned the 15 months, that time along with all the time it took to, you know, to get the story published and whatever, this has really been the last few years of your life has been devoted to this, hasn't it?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, once I found the publisher, I sent it off to them, sent them the entire manuscript. And then from that point, them making a decision that they would publish it and getting it into print was another 26 months.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been a long process, and I had no idea what the process would be like. But it's been fascinating, it's been fun, and it's been exciting.
A real education, I'm sure. It's one thing to write the book, but then get it published, do the marketing, which you're doing now with the book. The book is The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man by Dan Huddleston. That's Huddleston, if you're Googling. Book available, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places. Let's talk about this journey consists of two of the most important events in the United States, Vietnam War and the air traffic controller strike. To being a published author, you've touched on a lot of elements here. Talk about the milestones in your life, the Vietnam War and the air traffic controller strike, the impact those had on you. And I know it would take 3-4 hours to do it justice, but just very briefly, being part of two major parts of U.S. history.
Well, I started off, I had a plan, because I always have a plan, and my plan was that when I finished air traffic controller school, that I volunteered to spend 2 years on an overseas assignment, because the Air Force had this policy where if you spent 2 years out of the country, they had to bring you back to the United States for a year before they could send you out again. And so I requested Japan. I got it. Unfortunately, halfway through my tour in Japan, they decided to close the base. And since I was just down the road and around the corner, they sent me to Vietnam. And Inazuki Tower, Japan, was where I learned to love what I was doing. But Da Nang in the Republic of Vietnam was where I learned where my capability was. And for a young man learning a new career, it was just an incredible way to start.
That would be the ultimate test, and Dan writes about it in his memoir, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. Let's go to the air traffic controller strike. I remember that vividly. I was doing a television program at the time and had several air traffic controllers on from the Dayton, Ohio Air Traffic Control Center that were, of course, blocked out of their job. Talk about that. Just sort of set the table a little bit. What brought this all on and the impact it had on you?
Well, the history of the strike really goes back into the late 60s. There was always, a smoldering conflict between the Federal Aviation Administration and controllers. There was a sick out in the late 60s, and a lot of the leaders of the controllers union were fired because of that. But then in the late 70s, the talk of a full-fledged strike started happening again. And they set the numbers extraordinarily high. So we were going to have to take a huge portion of the workforce out the door before it would become a real thing. And so the summer of 1981, we took a strike vote. That failed. We didn't have the sufficient numbers. So through June and July of 81, it was a nonstop political action on the part of the union trying to get the necessary numbers, and August 3rd we walked out the door. It was a very difficult decision for everybody concerned, both those that went and those that stayed. But then 2 days after we went out, Ronald Reagan went on national television and ordered us back to work, and he said that if we did not return to work within 48 hours, we would all be terminated. 36 hours later, the FAA locked the gates on us, and it was a done deal. So once we were out, we were fired. You had 11,400 controllers that suddenly had lost their careers, and now it's time for us to find new ways to go about it. The other part of it that really hasn't been talked about very much is the Reagan administration not only fired us, but they blacklisted us from working in the field anywhere in the United States.
I did not know that. So you were, as an air traffic controller, you were shut down from doing it anywhere.
Absolutely. But there were a lot of other countries that were, they were looking at this and they were saying, holy smoke, all of a sudden we have access to some of the best controllers in the world, let's start hiring these people. And in 1982, I first looked at Australia, and that didn't work out. So then it was early in 1987, and I was working in retail at the time. And a friend and I had lunch, and he told me that somebody we knew was working for a company that was hiring controllers for other places around the world. And he asked me if I was still interested, and I said I was. So the next week he brought me a name, address, and phone number for a recruiter in London. And a week after, or that day when I got home, I sat down and wrote out a resume and sent it off to him. And a week later I called him, and we talked and decided that I would meet with their North American representative, and I did that. And they offered me a job. It was about 3 months after that initial discussion before I actually started to work. But that led me to Abu Dhabi.
The book is a fascinating read, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. Dan Huddleston is the author and our guest on the program. Book available at Amazon, the usual places, link for his Amazon page on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I want to talk for a second. I'm fascinated by air traffic controlling to begin with, but you're out of it. Now you're back in it, not in the United States, but in a foreign country. How long did it take for you to get your game back where you really felt comfortable? Because this is not a job where you can have a bad day.
Well, when I first started with this company, they sent me to their They have a college in Bath, England, where they train air traffic controllers. And they said I was going out there waiting for my visa to come through, but they thought it would be a good opportunity for me to run some simulation problems to start working my way back into it. So the first day I went to the simulator, we set up an approach problem. And at the end of that approach problem, they said to me, you don't need any more simulation classes.
Okay. It all came back. So you were ready to go in and take care of air traffic controlling.
Yeah, it was like riding a bicycle. And then when I got to Abu Dhabi, it just took a couple of months. And I was rare there in that for the most part, you would have people that were working the en route positions or area control, as they called it. You had people that worked approach control and you had people that worked tower. Occasionally you'd find somebody that worked both tower and approach. I had in my background all of them. So I checked out on the en route position. I checked out on approach control. I checked out on the international tower, and they even sent me to the municipal tower and I checked out over there. So I got to work all of them. And it fed my basic restlessness because I got to do something different pretty much every day.
And all of this in Dan's memoir, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. I want to talk about that, the wanderlust. I mentioned all of the traveling you've been done. I can't keep track of how many times you've been across the various time zones in the world. Where did this wanderlust come from? How did your desire to travel, how did that all begin?
Oh my gosh, it's always been there. Even as a young boy, I'd walk along, I'd look up in the air and see an airplane going over, and I would find myself saying, I wonder where they're going, and or see a ship out on the horizon somewhere, and the same thing, where are they going? I'd like to go there too. And so this just fed that opportunity, and that was part of the reason that I requested an overseas assignment in the Air Force too. And it's just been an amazing journey.
And all in Dan's book, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man, Dan Huddleston, HUDDLESTON. We've got the Amazon link on our site, thisweekinamerica.us. Can you share maybe some of the most extraordinary things that you experienced during your travels? I hate to ask you to list them in order because, geez, you've traveled so extensively, and I'm sure have so many, but several that come to mind that really stand out in your mind is, boy, my life is much better because I've done this.
Well, you know, it's a question that I get asked a lot. And the best answer I have is actually it's multiple answers. Switzerland was just an incredibly beautiful country, but the Swiss are very hard to live with as an outsider, an Ausländer, because they're very insular people. From a social standpoint, Abu Dhabi was a wonderful environment. We had a large extended family that was about 50 people from a dozen different nationalities, and we were always doing something with them. From an employment standpoint, Hong Kong Civil Aviation Authority was hands down the best employer I've ever had. They really cared for their people, and they've been over backwards to make sure that you knew they cared for you. But if there's one single place that stands out as my absolute favorite, it's the Grand Hyatt Nusa Dua on the island of Bali in Indonesia. And my lovely lady and I went there twice. And it is a romantic scene that is just simply beyond imagination.
Dan Huddleston, our guest on the program, we're talking about his book, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. I want to go back and touch on this air traffic control situation again. I'm fascinated by this. An interesting paragraph in your book begins, "What or who is an air traffic controller?" Can you tell us more about this? I'm sure not everyone may be familiar with exactly what goes in the tower there. What is an air traffic controller? Talk a little bit about that paragraph, because that really sets up a lot of interesting stories.
Well, pretty much every agency around the world who employs air traffic controllers has been forever trying to find a matrix that would allow them to pinpoint who's going to be successful and who's not. And I think it would be fair to say they've all failed. And I'm loath to say it's hit or miss, But really, you put a person to the test, and they're either going to succeed or they're not. Most are not. It requires that you have to have a capacity to absorb vast amounts of information and then recall it at the time that it's required. You have to be able to have extreme situational awareness, but at the same time to focus intensely. There are just so many things like that that go into it. We are ruthlessly hard on each other. If somebody does something well, the attitude is, yeah, oh well. But if you do something wrong, they're going to make sure that they let you know that you did something wrong. And it all boils down to the fact that the margin for error is just simply infinitesimal. They're just such a tiny little margin for error. And just a number to give you an idea of how small that is, a operational error or system error, or in the vernacular, it's called a deal, and that's a loss of standard separation. Standard separation, of course, being in the in-route environment, it's 1,000 feet above and below and 5 miles laterally. Anything inside of that is considered a loss of separation or an operational error. In Chicago Center, typically in a year, out of about 3 million operations, you would have somewhere around 15 operational errors.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really low percentage.
It's a very tiny percentage.
Yes, not a zero.
And it just shows, I think more than anything else, the talent and the dedication of the men and women that are doing the job every day.
Dan Huddleston is our guest on the program, Huddleston. The book is The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. This is the first published book. I'm sure it's also one of the most important milestones in your life. I mentioned several of those before. What was it like writing the book, going through that anticipation, and finally picking up that copy? You've got a physical copy of your book in your hands. What was that like, the pride that you obviously felt being a published author?
Oh, it was thrilling. And, I knew that it was coming. And then all of a sudden, one day, there was a box sitting on my doorstep. And I opened up the box, and there were 25 copies of the book inside the box. And it was an incredibly satisfying feeling to know that all of the work that I had put into it had finally come to fruition.
And excellent reviews for the book, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. What do you hope the takeaway is? There are stories in We Live Vicariously, Travel Vicariously Through You, but what do you hope the takeaway is? I think some of this is like, boy, if I had it to do all over again and maybe still have some time, I'd like to do some of this traveling that Dan did and enjoyed so much.
I love the travel even from the point where the book was completed, I've continued to do that. My most recent, this past September, I went to New Zealand and Fiji, and I have every intention of continuing as much of it as I can, as long as I'm healthy enough to do so. And I know that those years are numbered, because I'll be 72 in May. And good health is not going to last forever. So I'll do as much traveling as I can while I have the opportunity.
Yeah, 72 is just a kid. You've got plenty of time left to get out there and to do more traveling. Any advice for aspiring authors? There may be somebody that's listening that's going, I sort of went through that thing with Dan. I thought about maybe writing a book. I think I've got some experiences that I like to share with others, maybe motivate some other people. Any advice for someone first time that's really reluctant, hesitant to jump in and to write their book?
Boy, I guess the only thing I can say is that you just have to do it. And I guess I started writing it for me. And so it was very satisfying for me when people started telling me that they felt that there was something there that would have a broader interest than just me. But I guess the end result is that I was happy with what I produced, and I hope other people are as well.
Well, they are, as I say, getting rave reviews. And I got a couple minutes left here in the program, but I would like to ask about that. What was this like for you going back and reliving your life, maybe doing a little bit of research and certainly spending some time alone in your mind, going back to recreate what you went through? What was that process like for you going back and reliving all of these experiences?
The memories just came flooding back, and it was just fascinating. I have a nephew who quite frequently he says to me, I don't know where you, how you remembered all of this. and I don't either. All I know is that once I started thinking about things, the memories came flooding back very quickly, and it became a pretty easy process once I started into it.
Now, you're a very talented writer. This book is so well written, really tells the story. It moves along. It's got all the elements of a good read for people. Are you thinking about another book? Will there be a second book in Dan Huddleston's future?
I don't quite know the answer to that. One of my sisters is encouraging me to do another book. And she says that I should make it a travel log for everyone. And I have a friend who tells me frequently that I write the way I talk. So when you read my book, you're really reading me.
Like having a conversation, like having a conversation with Dan in the room.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
I guess it's a possibility. I it's something that I'm not putting a lot of thought into right now. But there certainly is a possibility that before too long, I could get the bug again and then start again.
Well, you've got all this knowledge how it works, so it'll take a lot less time this week or this time around to write the story, get it published, and get it out there. And we'll hope that happens. In the meantime, we will enjoy your book, the memoir, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man, Dan Huddleston, Huddleston, book available at all of the usual places, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. We'll have a list of these and links on our website, marketing handled by KingPagesPress.com. I thank them for arranging our interview today. Dan, it's been a pleasure. Congratulations on the success of The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Rick, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
It has been our pleasure. Dan Huddleston, The Extraordinary Life of an Ordinary Man. Information available on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.